Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Social Echoes from True Voice Media. It's another special edition of Much More Mobile, Social Echoes 3M with my good buddy Patrick Goodman. And if you are ready to listen up and get started, we can go ahead and do that. Hello,
Awesome, buddy.
Patrick.
How are you?
I'm okay. I woke up this morning. I was happy because I've been dealing with a cold all weekend, and I was happy that I didn't seem to be still afflicted with the typical ongoings of a cold. So I still sound a bit under the weather, but I'm much better than I was even yesterday. So my apologies to anybody listening if I sound a little froggy, or maybe even a bit more manly or radio voice-y. But
You're dropping the Barry White on us. Oh, yeah. Much
ongoing
more mobile.
chef from South Park. Hello, children.
Nice.
Yeah. So, how you been? I know you had a busy weekend.
It was fun. So this past Saturday, I ran a 5K, the Anthem 5K in Louisville. It's the first of three legs for the Louisville Triple Crown of running. A couple weeks, there's a 10K that I'm going to do. And then right before, I think it's the first weekend in April, is the Papa John's 10 miler. So being a pretty, big guy, big build, former football player, 10 miles scares me. 6 miles and a 10K is enough, right? But 10 miles, I mean, Lord, they might have to call the ambulance to kind of bring me in. But it was one of my goals that I set last year was, I want to be intentional about being healthy and exercising. And so I think it was last September I put those three races on my calendar saying, this has to get done this year. So got the first one done, 10K in a few weeks. So that was fun with my daughter and just family stuff and faith-based activities throughout the weekend. So pretty full.
Well, good for you. That's you've done more running thus far this year probably than I have. I've done the majority of it on the treadmill, but now that I look outside and it's about mid-50s here in the Philadelphia suburbs, it'll get a lot easier, and especially once this congestion leaves my nasal cavity, I will be able to fully enjoy the 17-pound weight loss that I've accomplished thus far in 2013. But anyway, on to the subject at hand. Let's talk about mobile. Patrick, the last two guests that you've had on mobile chat, and folks, if you're interested in mobile chat, you can check that out on Wednesday nights on Twitter at 9 p.m. Using the hashtag mobile chat. Two of the guests that you had, the one that was 2 weeks ago was a
Scott
gentleman,
Porche.
Scott Porche, and he was talking about one of the things that was very interesting was the context of mobile. You want to talk a little bit about that and what Scott discussed in the hour of mobile chat?
Sure. So, Scott is at Scott Forshay on Twitter, a guy who's focused a lot about, luxury brands and how they engage specifically with, their potential customers. In the context of Twitter, and others have said this, and I think is well, there's lots of people, whether you want to argue big data is king or content is king or whatever, I mean, it's fine. I mean, Gary V, who I would in many ways agree with, which is context is king, and the power of mobile is connecting people where they're at, where they're standing. So, for example, if I'm in a store or if I'm wanting to make a purchase, that I could actually build contextual relationships with that particular store entity or person, or if I'm walking down the road and I took a picture of X, that I could then share that on my social channels, and so then someone could see that, and then there's the context of where I'm at, what I'm doing, what I'm talking about, and that's the power that Scott's was focusing on in mobile chat. If you want to see, the what I call the Cliff Notes Q&A of that, at the end of each mobile chat each week, I put together a Storyfy, just because tweet chats are fun. There's, some of the larger ones will do, several thousand tweets an hour. We average between about 900 to 1,200 tweets in an hour, and it's just too fast. And so I break out the formal Q&A. So if you go to storyfy.com/Patrick Goodman, you can find the past, chats we've done. You can see, Scott's answers to all those questions. But at the end of the day, the real power of mobile is going to be context. It's not about whether you use an iPhone or an Android, nobody cares. It really, I mean, there are some fanboys on either side or whatever tablet you have. This is how people will be connected and always real-time connected no matter where they're at or where they're sitting, whether it's in a restaurant or stuck in traffic or, you know, in bed with the screen illuminating your face and you're still, you know, talking to people. That's the contextual piece of mobile that's really fun and interesting.
The one thing that I saw Scott was discussing that I think is really interesting, he was saying that mobile 1.0, not web 1.0 or web 2.0, he was saying that mobile 1.0 was all about being accessible, being findable. And I still think that a lot of companies and a lot of brands are having a tough time with that. And the fact that he's already talking about context, which I don't think that he's wrong in doing, because I think that when we're discussing it, we're on a different plane than a lot of other folks are. And a lot of other brands and companies are already thinking about. Where's the disparity? How big is the disparity? And how do you think that brands can kind of catch up?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually this morning I read I get RSS emails from Social Media Explorer. And, you know, Jason Falls had did a kind of a test. I don't know if you saw this that came out, but he sent a tweet which said, hey, looking to have lunch in a Louisville restaurant. And then he put, you know, doing an experiment and put, right? So he was playing along, wanted to see who was listening. And I think he mentioned, you know, 5-6 or so individual people who responded, but he had one restaurant who responded and said, hey, Jason, how about having lunch with us? You know, at its core level, and this is stuff that's been discussed at least in, you know, those of us who live and breathe, you know, digital marketing communication for 5-6 years now, is just listening, just showing up is important, knowing how to open up your social media monitoring communication platform of choice and having a column for your brand or if you're a specific small business in a city. Just begin there. And some people say, well, you have to be online 24/7. Yeah, I mean, I get that. You know, some people don't have enough bandwidth, even in their budget, to do that. But if nothing else, just simply being a part of the conversation and not just always pitching and selling. Every smart person realizes that there is a human voice, a human person behind every company avatar. And just listening, saying, hey, would you like to come have lunch with us? Not saying, hey, here's a coupon, here's 10% off, just casual and being a human, is the first place I think brands will win, whether it's a luxury brand that Scott Forsythe, you know, chatted about, or specifically, I mean, that'd be the, I mean, it, be human, listen, care. I mean, others have said it well. I mean, the best marketing communication strategy is simply to care. And if you don't listen, one, you can't care. Then when you start, there are other best steps. But in many ways, I would tell people that, you know, if you have friends and relationships, the way in which you communicate and treat them and what you talk about and how you're engaged with them, it's no different if you're a company. I mean, that's kind of been one of the fun things about the way communication has dramatically, you know, shifted and changed. And hopefully it doesn't go back, where I can have an actual conversation with, I go into Home Depot and saying, I just love to come in here, and no affiliate, it's near my house, and I go in and I ask somebody, hey, I really want to go find this, can you help me? And someone says, you know, I don't know, but let me find somebody, and, like, you know, holds my hand more or less and takes me to this department and asks Rick, and Rick says, hey, you know, that's great, it's over in this aisle in this place, and Rick must be like, you know, the Buddha God of Home Depot, the man knows the whole store when I'm in there. And then I tweet out, you know, just thank you so much. I go into my local Home Depot store, and they always just can find what I need, right? And they responded back to me. Thanks, Patrick, for coming in and your store. They're not offering me a coupon. I didn't want it. I wasn't saying that. I was just saying, look, I like coming to your store because you guys are helpful, and they respond back to me. It's a nice human connection and touch, and that probably is actually a year ago, and it still left a lasting impression on me as a consumer.
To Jason's experiment, I conducted one that was very similar to his for Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for Valentine's Day flowers, and I hadn't gotten them yet, and it was a bit last minute. And I think it was either 2 days before or a day before Valentine's Day, or maybe even Valentine's Day. I tweeted out, I just said, I was very clear, I said, hey, I need to buy flowers. Who Wants My Business? And it was kind of in the same vein. I was curious as to who in the Philadelphia suburbs was listening to me, and or just listening in general, not to me, not that they're like waiting for me to tweet out, because I don't think anybody is. Nobody is. And I didn't get any responses. And it wasn't, I don't think I was even surprised. I would have been thrilled if somebody had stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we'd like for you to be, you know, we'd like for you to patron our business and, you know, come in and take care of your Valentine's Day shopping. And that would have been awesome, because that would have created a new relationship that I probably didn't have, or they didn't have, and it would have established new word of mouth traffic for them. I would have told the story, certainly, probably would have written about it. And it kind of was like, it ended up being like seed scattered in rock. It just didn't, nothing happened from it.
Right.
And I guess it's probably a lot like Jason's experiment.
Yeah. So interesting, even for, you know, he has, you know, a way larger follower base than, you know, you and I will on Twitter. But what's unique about that is it doesn't matter. A brand doesn't have to go follow all the heavy influencers. If they can just simply search keywords or city or your specific, you know, niche product, whatever that is, and they can still see that. There could be lots of reasons. I think companies are still, you know, dabbling in social. You know, I think we may have discussed this before, but they're still kind of dating social, not really sure if they want to really get, you know, engaged to it yet and fully, you know, jump on board and put all their eggs, if you will, in that basket. You know, if brands still want to go spend millions of dollars on Super Bowl ads and hope that that's going to be, you know, win the day, you know, you look at sales. I know whatever somebody thinks about, you know, GoDaddy's, you know, commercial spots I had read where they had one of their largest sales days of ever after that event. And I don't know how they engaged in social channels, but all of us who live here know what Oreo did, you know, during the event about how they engaged, and there's lots of conversations and connections about that. You know, did it allow them to sell more Oreos or sell more widgets? You know, I don't know. I'm not the sales guy there, so I don't have the sheets. They see a massive bump in sales based on those interactions and conversations. The hard part going forward is, as brands are now kind of coming online where we're talking, because think about it, this is not new, right? So chat rooms have been available for 20 years. People have been online talking. They're just relational people. And so when advertisers want to get in there, the traditional, hey, come buy me, come connect with me, just doesn't work. It's not how I want to, you know, be sold to. I mean, I want to be, yes, there's stuff that I want to buy, but there's connections and then the context that I want to build first. And I'm much more likely to give my business to people that I think actually care about who I am and what I'm a part of than just simply, here's a 10% coupon. And I get people still buy on sales, but there's a huge ripe opportunity if brands would just simply care and listen and respond. And, you know, those are the ways in which I think companies will win. Could be wrong about that, but I mean, that. Those are the reasons even we invest so much time in social. We believe that we're humans, and, you know, our indecision makers may, you know, sit in a cubicle. However, they're people. I mean, they truly are. And so if we want to be connected to them, we've got to be human with them as well.
To that point, and this is going to eventually get to my next question, which will bring us to your latest tweet chat. I'm sorry, your latest mobile chat, which is Sweet Chat, yeah. I wrote a post a long time ago, and it just was published not too recently, between Chipotle and Qdoba, two of my favorite restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I originally started as a Qdoba guy, and I slowly converted into a big Chipotle evangelist, kind of. And it's interesting because when I first kind of started to write the posts, I was going to try and figure out why Qdoba was better. And as I continued to write it, I found myself totally on the Chipotle bandwagon. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that when I was discussing Mexican, you know, Mexican fast food, because they consider themselves a fast food chain, both of them, mm-hmm. Chipotle was always the most responsive. It wasn't just the fact that they responded. They were blazing fast. They would get to me within 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they have three different community managers around the clock always going through their tweets. And on Facebook. But that's just the way that I've always engaged with them is through Twitter. They're a very social company, and it's not surprising that all these different food companies are social, because when you think about it, food companies, it's a consumable. It's something that's not going to have a long shelf life. So the more interaction that you have, the more volume of discussion that is occurring, it makes sense that like it's always going to be top of mind, because you know, if people want to eat, food mm-hmm. is always top of mind. And one of the things that you were talking about with Oreo, my favorite Super Bowl ad was from Audi. People don't buy Audis every day. They don't have to go to the supermarket every week. They don't mm-hmm. have to go to a car dealership every week. It's a once in like every 4 years type thing. Once you get to that point, you're either leasing or you're buying a car, and that's it for the next 4 to 7 years, or however long you're going to get out of that car. I'm not going to eat a burrito and then not eat for the next four years.
Right.
So to that point, you had Eat24, at Eat24 on Twitter, as your latest mobile chat guest. And they were doing some very interesting things with online ordering and mobile ordering. And they've made it so easy that Jim Gaffigan's joke about we're so lazy as a country to kind of like we don't even want to go if we have a favorite food, we don't even want to go pick it up. And then he said we're also so lazy we're going to get to the point where we're going to be in the bathtub and call people and say, yeah, I like your food, but not enough to come eat it. Yeah, I'm also going to need somebody to eat to feed me. Yep, I'm in the tub.
Yeah.
Is that basically the type of service that Eat24 provides? And there's the obvious joke that I want you to share from Eat24.
Yeah, so they talk about it. If you look at their bio on Twitter, it's about, you know, their mission in life is to feed people, but also they have what they call like the no-pants nation. They want you to be able to be at your house in your boxers or whatever else you choose to wear or not wear while you're at home in your own, you know, castle, and be able to open their app, find the food you want, purchase and order that food via the app. And here's the great thing about the way they built their mobile application is they put into the app live 24/7 customer support. It's huge. It really is huge because, and I've actually watched their tweets even after this, and they keep engaging people. The order's wrong, and so they'll tweet back. So sorry, we called the store at this time. We have a note. I mean, they're taking explicit notes at 5:33, whatever. We made a note to update, change the order. Did that happen? No, it didn't. It was delivered wrong. And they're, you know, tweet back, we'd love to make it up to you. You know, so that's the nice play. Yes, they're meeting, you know, people who may want to be a sloth. They have a really great video, which is, you know, if you're a sloth and you want to get off the couch, just open up your app and order the food. But you are right when it comes to the way in which we engage and the timing we engaged around, you know, food brands and, you know, short shelf life consumables. E24 does it well. I'm not sure if they're there with you, you know, up in the Northeast area, if there's other cities that are specific, but they're not in Louisville yet, and I'm pleading, please come to Louisville. You know, and I get it, it takes some time and a lot of, you know, feet on the ground for them to set up restaurants and such inside the app, but it's helpful. There's times in my house, and I've got three kids, and, you know, life is full and crazy with kids, and I just want to be, you know, I want to go and order what I want. But oftentimes, so some of the larger companies, yes, they're going to have a web presence. I can go order a pizza online and have it delivered to my house. That's cool. But what if I wanted sushi or Chinese or Thai or, you know, something a little different than just the standard fare, you know? Do those companies have online ordering portals? Not usually. And even Rantalo Town, which is Outback, you have to drive up to this place and they have your own little parking place. You know, could Outback also be on, you know, delivered to your house? But a very social brand. They're managed. If you go back and look at on our website, there's a link. I mean, just a young, chatty demographic. I think brands are wise if they'll you know, consider how much 18 to 35 year olds are going to be involved in social communication channels. It's not like, well, they have to go figure that out. That's going to be the thing to figure out. We don't want other forms of communication normally. If you want to call me anymore, honestly, you call me on Twitter or you G plus, you know, chat me or we start a hangout. I've probably done 4 hangouts in the last week and I have no idea what people's email addresses are or mobile phone numbers. I don't need them anymore, you know, because we have built a new ecosystem in which we can connect and communicate with people. So a long answer to social and communication, you know, digitally are great combos.
Can't argue with that. The interesting thing about E24 is that there just seems to be so many, seems to be a lot of different food service type apps, right? I just saw one the other day. My boss and I, after a meeting, went to go in Philadelphia and got a sandwich at Paisano's. And anybody in Philadelphia knows all about Paisano's. I'm now hooked. It's delicious. And there was something on the window called Foodler, and I had never seen that. My boss had never seen that, and he got very excited because he said, "Okay, so you guys deliver via Foodler," and he said, "That's awesome." Immediately downloaded the app. I'm sure he'll get a sandwich from them via Foodler very, mm-hmm. very soon. What do you think, if anything, makes Eat24 different? Is it the human side chat that they provide? Is that the differentiator between them and a lot of the different things you see, like in New York City or San Francisco, LA, Austin, etc.?
Yeah, so their unique thing is that they're in so many cities already. And so they have a much broader reach. Let's say if, you know, a specific app is just in a city. So typically when a startup starts something in mobile, they want to start in their own hometown and they get some pilots on board, people are testing and trying it out. Then they have to go reach out to the next city and the next city. Well, the thing about Eat24 is that they're already in so many places. They're already kind of having an established brand, which is if you want to eat out, you don't have to download just this one app for this store. They are curating all the restaurants into their specific app so you can go find what you want. And then layering on top of that, just humorful responses, you know, back to, you know, the food human connection. I think that makes the difference. So, and I'd be curious to know, and don't know that brand at all, if they're doing well with, you know, mobile specifically in ordering, let me know. I'm happy to have them on as a guest and just, you know, what are you learning? They might be in year 1 or 2, where E24 is, you know, much longer down the road when it comes to development and people understanding who they are. But again, it's not easy. It's not hard. But then again, I mean, think about it. Relationships aren't that easy either. So whether you're a person's significant other or parent to child or employee to employer, relationships take time. They take constant communication and connection. And as soon as communication starts to dry up, then the relationship begins to wane and sour, right? It's no different, at least in my mind, when it comes to companies' brand wanting to talk to employees or consumers.
Couldn't agree more. Patrick, one thing before I let you go. We just had South by Southwest during the weekend, which we're recording this, and Google Glass, of course, is the most dominant tech item on the planet right now. It's, you know, it's the coolest thing out there. People are mm-hmm. curious about it. They're scared about it. Would you define that as a mobile piece of technology?
Or is it something? It is. No, it's the next really evolution of mobile. It is. I think it's brilliant. Hands down, brilliant. Even when it came out and they had the hashtag, what was the hashtag? If I had glass. Yeah. So my tweet and also my post on Google Plus was, if I had glass, I would change my social avatar. If you see mine, it has an iPhone in front of it, right? Because that's the way in which I view the world. So I'm pre-Google Glass with Avatar. But it's unique in the way in which people – it's funny where when I've read – I forgot the author from The Verge who did a blog post piece and a video piece about how we had technology and the problem with you know, smart devices is this. You know, we're all looking down, texting, connecting here because we want to be connected. So with glass now, be able to put this piece down and to view the world the way in which we, you know, normally see it, but to have it here, which is to read a text, to send a message. Hey, take a picture of this. And I'm still, my focus is still on the event in front of me and not back on my smart mobile device. Just it's amazing if someone's seen the 2 minute or so video spot that they put out, or someone's riding a horse, or they're, you know, trapeze artist, or they're in a hot air balloon, or they're on a plane and they say, you know, start a hangout with this group and it starts. To give you context. So last night, true story, sitting at my house and somehow this came up and my 9-year-old daughter was sitting next to me working on the computer doing some stuff and Google Glass came up and she said, "Hey Daddy, what's that?" So I said, I showed her the video and her response was, "Cool. Can we ask Santa for that?"
Yeah.
She said. And I said, "Well, it's, you know, pretty expensive." She goes, "But that's really neat, Daddy." I said, "I know."
I'm not sure if Santa can get his hands on that.
Maybe for $1,500 in the right place. I mean, but yeah. I think their hope is to, you know, have a consumer product out by the end of the year, which for everybody means basically, you know, it's kind of like the October, November it launches and ready for purchase for Christmas. What I love most about this is not whether it's Google or not, is that the innovative thought process and way in which we use technology to connect with people. And I love that they're building technology, which in some ways is getting technology out of the way, which has kind of been the iteration of what smart devices have been. It doesn't mean that people are going to run out and we're going to have, you know, thousands and thousands of people instantly using Google Glass. But what it will mean is that we're looking at what, you know, potentially the next evolution of mobile will be. It's like when Apple walked out in 07, 08 and started introducing the iPhone. No one ever even thought about this before. Now there's a new, you know, Android-based iOS smart device out there every 3 or 4 months, and people are already, you know, picking at Apple, you know, because they're not innovating again and again and again and such. That's what's nice about Glass. Any technology that can get out of the way, which is, so this, you and I are connecting on Google Plus, which has been a really great platform for that, you know, to allow us to connect in that manner. But then instead of me just sitting here, the problem is I'm sitting now in front of my computer, right? I can't take you out and show you, you know, I can't walk down, you know, by the river and show you that. I mean, I could take my device maybe and kind of do a panorama, but I'd love to still, for me to engage with that and still be able to engage with you and talk to you. It's fun. And so, yeah, maybe my daughter's right. Maybe I'll ask Santa for Google Glass. I do have some, you know, sort of, I do have friends, you know, via social channels that are at Google. I'm not sure how much weight they have, but yeah, so at Google, you know, you guys are listening to this. I'm more than happy to have you as a guest on Mobile Chat, and you can pimp out your new product, and I'm more than happy to, you know, use the product and give you a review. So just saying, hashtag hint.
Hashtag hint.
Hashtag hint.
Hashtag Patrick Goodman wants to talk to Google.
Absolutely. Pretty much.
There's been a lot of backlash about it, too. There's already been one bar in Seattle, I think, that's banned Google Glass long before it's even been rolled out. Which, honestly, when I read that, it didn't surprise me. Because I know a lot of folks, I was having a debate with my girlfriend, and then in the conversation I had with my cousin this weekend, they both were kind of expressing their concerns about why is this necessary. And the thing that I kind of really, when I read Mitch Joel's post on Google Glass about 2 weeks ago when he had first tried it out at TED, and I thought it was one of the best, and I encourage everybody to go and read that because it was one of the best kind of write-ups about Glass. He said, number one, I love it. Number two, it's an intermediary technology. And I was like, wow, that's the first time I've seen anybody write that, because I think it's so true. Like, I think that's the thing. It's inherent. Like, we look at it and we think, what's next, right? Because we look at it and we think about the Terminator and like Arnold Schwarzenegger and how he was able to look at the world, and it was like a cyborg. He picked up different things, greater rich data points that you can't see with just your organic eye.
Right.
And this then kind of it fuses into what Cisco's talking about with all their commercials with the Internet of Everything and Ray Kurzweil, the singularity in 2019, 2020. There's such a big kind of just this ether of this world that we're getting into, technology getting out of the way of technology. There's a big strain on engineers and developers. I'm sure it's extremely exciting for them. I think it's putting those that are not involved in tech and not reading the articles every day and kind of waiting for the news to tell them what's going on or their friends to tell them what's going on. They kind of are a little bit apprehensive of what's in the pipeline and what's coming next. And I can't blame them because, I mean, even I look at some of this stuff and I'm like, geez, that's pretty crazy. I just hope I can keep up, and I hope that I'm never the guy that kind of looks at it and say, I'm out. Like, I don't understand anymore. But at the same time, glass seems like one of those technologies you can't wait to get your hands on. But there are a lot of different privacy concerns. I completely understand that. People aren't ever going to, I think, feel comfortable with it. But at the same time, this is just the start, right? So if folks aren't comfortable with this, we're talking about privacy on mobile and teens just kind of being like, you know, whatever, with privacy concerns. I'm curious as to, you know, I have a 13-year-old brother. He's going to look at Google Glass and kind of just think, well, that's just the way the world works. That's just how my world is going to work for the next X amount of years. And sure, moving forward, et cetera. It should be a very heated but a very intellectual debate on what is privacy, what is security, what is private, and what's next.
Yeah, I mean, so think of it this way, and the correlation won't be exact, but think about when the Model T came out, right? People were like, oh my goodness, the thing goes so fast, and what about safety, and people are going to get run over, and isn't it better if we just use a horse-drawn buggy and carriage, and you know what we can support there, and you can only take two people, and right? Well, now the fact that we drive 80 miles an hour, you know, in places where it's legal, or 70 miles an hour on the interstate, it's just normal. I haven't known any different. This morning I was, you know, reading a book with my 20-month-old son on an iPad and singing songs with him, and he's touching lights and he's clicking stuff, and he clicks the home button and goes, uh-oh, and he takes and slides over and finds a new app and launches it. It's just normal for him. It just is. This is the way in which you and I use technology for personal stuff and for business, and it just simply is what it is. We don't know any different. My kids won't know any different than, you know, email and social connection. My 9-year-old is working on a blog at the moment. It comes down to, for her, it's just about the way she writes. It's not the blog per se. The thing about driving, it's not the car or the buggy. We're still, you know, being transported from place point A to point B. And the same is true for glass. Whether it's, so now that we've got the glass piece, which is still connected to your smart mobile device, you know, realistically the next piece for, I mean, real mobile would be actually contact lenses. The same thing that glass does. You know, where I could then walk into a room and not only see people, but, you know, how am I connected to them? Or there's a new app that just came out. It's been on Android for a while. It came out on iOS. So a friend of mine let me know it's available, called At Field Trip app. You're in a city, in a place, and it sends you push notifications that, hey, you just walked past a really historic place. You want to check it out, right? So even I told her when I was running the 5K on Saturday, I'm running down a kind of historic downtown Louisville River Road area, and I get this push, right? I'm jogging. It's like, hey, this is the, you know, place of 1937, whatever, flood in Louisville. Well, the same will be true for glass as I'm running down the road, and I have glass on or a contact lens in or something of that nature, and it alerts me that, hey, this is going on. It's almost like, you know, a digital version of road signs that we're used to all the time, and get off here and do it for this exit. That's the real evolution, I think, of what a digital mobile connected technology could be. That's my two cents.
That's sick. I mean, that's really sick. The fact that you're already thinking about lenses, and I don't doubt it. That's the thing. You don't even think twice about, like, oh, that can't happen.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I started wearing, you know, glasses when I was in the first grade. I've and then began wearing corrective contact lenses about my freshman year of high school. So honestly, it would be nothing for me just to get a contact lens, pop it in, and be able then to not only interact and communicate with you, but I could, you know, read in front of me. It could easily, not easily in the sense of it takes time, but I mean, that's the evolution of it. But I could get messages and texts in front of me. I mean, right now, I'm on my computer, and I'm on Apple's latest iOS, and I get notifications that people send me text in this thing, and I got email messages that came in. It could be the same thing, that I got this text came in, and this came in, this alert came in. It's the same idea.
Yeah.
Letting people be connected. Well, it may scare some people. I'm probably not the average duck, but it's okay.
That's okay. That's why we like you. But Patrick, thank you very much for your time. Always enlightening conversation. Always pushing the bar on mobile. Always curious. Just why? We like talking to you, Patrick. Where can folks go to be social with you?
Yeah, so I live on the web. Fastest place is just go to google.com, type in Patrick Goodman. I'm somewhere on the first page. Or you can go to Twitter. I love to talk there, at Marketing Musing, a guy who loves to talk a lot, as you can probably already tell, and a guy who likes to think about it. So at Marketing Musing on Twitter is a good intro place to find me if you can't find me on the first page of Google.
Good stuff. As always, Patrick is moderator of Mobile Chat, which you can find on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. on Twitter. That'll wrap it up for episode 2 of Much More Mobile, the Social Echoes 3M podcast. And that'll do it for episode 12 as well. If you are enjoying the show, please go to iTunes and leave us a review, a rating, anything in between. We just want to know how you're enjoying the show and how we can improve it for you, what you want to know more about in social, mobile, business, etc., etc. If you have any topics of discussion, you want to just talk with me, always feel free to email me, jonjohn@truevoicemedia.com. We will see you guys next time. Appreciate you listening in, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy. Cheers, all.
See you, Patrick.